I'm Nyer Ernest from the chaplain at the Compass Center, and I am here with the director, and I'll let him introduce himself.
And I'm Jim Fergan, the executive director of the Compass Center, a Lutheran organization in downtown Seattle.
Our subject for tonight is The Wounded Healers, Stories of God in and Through Homeless Street People. I'd like to have us start out quietly and maybe tonight think about the homeless people, wherever they might be, whatever their situation. And a free translation quote from Jesus, and maybe you can sense him here saying these words. Every fox has a den. Every bird has a nest. Only humans are homeless. It's a tragedy in many ways to be homeless. But I suppose one of the hardest things to be poor and homeless and all the things that go with it is what it does so often to your self-esteem. And so I'll ask you to visualize, a not-so-young man. His father, a Lutheran pastor back in the Midwest. But he's lost his way, and he's homeless. He has problems. It's Sunday morning. He'd really like to go to church, but the way his clothes look, the way he feels about himself, he really doesn't feel worthy. And so he takes his little testament and he opens it to the Psalms, and he goes to one of the favorites of the street people. And we can't go through it as slowly as he would go through it. But as he sits there in Seattle, looking over Puget Sound, looking at the Olympic Mountains, watching the ferry, he sits there and quietly has his Sunday morning experience with a good and gracious God by contemplating the 107th Psalm. And I'll ask my wife Louise to read it and for you to kind of put yourself in his place, to feel something of what he's feeling, both in terms of joy and of sorrow.
Give thanks to the Lord of goodness, for God is lasting love. Let those saved by God tell their story, how the Lord snatched them from the oppressor's might, gathering them from east and west, from north and south. They wandered through wasteland, trekked over sands, finding no city, no home. Weak from hunger and thirst, their lives were fading away. Then they cried out to God, who snatched them from danger, leading them up a straight road to a place they could settle. Let them celebrate God's love, all the wonders revealed to them. The Lord slaked their thirst and filled their aching bellies. There were some confined in darkness, chained by suffering, for they rejected God's word, scorned the plan of the Most High. Burdened by their misery, they fell with no one to help. Then they cried out, and God snatched them from danger, shattering their fetters, banishing the darkness. Let them celebrate God's love, all the wonders revealed to them. The Lord smashed iron bars and doors of bronze. Disease struck down others for rebelling in their sin. Sickened by food, they almost died. Then they cried out, and God snatched them from danger, spoke a word of healing, and kept them alive. Let them celebrate God's love, all the wonders revealed to them. Let them offer a sacrifice of praise and tell their story with joy. Sailors went down to the sea, traders on merchant ships, and saw the works of the Lord, all the wonders of the deep. At God's command, a storm whipped up the waves, high as the rolling clouds, low as the fathomless depths. Seafarers trembled, lurching and reeling like drunks, helpless without their skills. Then they cried out, and God snatched them from danger. Hushing the wind, stilling the waters, they rejoiced in the calm as God brought them to port. Let them celebrate God's love, all the wonders revealed to them. Let the assembly shout Alleluia, and the elders sing praise in the temple. God turns rivers into sand, springs to thirsty ground, rich earth to salt flats, when evil dwells in a land. But God turns desert to flowing water, dry land to fertile valleys, and gives this place to the hungry, where they build their city. They sow crops, plant vines, and gather the harvest. With God's blessing they prosper. People and cattle increase. But if they fail to prosper and suffer oppression and pain, God will scorn
about it, or share what comes into your mind. And I'll turn the light on if you want to take the first one.
The Compass Center has, I think, experienced many miracle stories of homeless people who have imaged God to myself, to Nair, and to the staff who work there. And what we'll do, Nair and I, in the next couple of days, is to talk about this particular agency of the Lutheran Church. Its history. It started this year. We celebrate our 75th anniversary. It's a particular ministry within the Lutheran Church that is unique. We don't find missions or centers for services to homeless people in other major cities of America or smaller cities. You do find today in many Lutheran churches, of course, food banks and other programs for homeless people, Lutheran congregations reaching out and providing meals, but almost always at the Union Gospel Missions or the Salvation Armies of America. Because there are anywhere from 2 to 3 million Americans who are homeless at any given time, it means that that the church especially is called upon to live as the body of Christ and to walk in the midst of these people. And there are many stories that, and I want to share one of the most recent stories that I just experienced this last week before my wife Judy, who's sitting over here, she, just before we came up here today, a woman by the name of Jean Marie, at one time in Oregon, was homeless. She had properties in Oregon. She lost them. She had a family. She had a home. And she lost everything because of her disease of alcoholism. And she moved in with her sister for a while, and while she was in Oregon, she met a young man by the name of Jim, and Jim was desperately in love with Jean Marie, and finally he went down to Oregon and brought her up here to Seattle to get well and to stay well, get her into treatment and so forth and so on. He wasn't successful. He was able to help Jean Marie stay away from alcohol for about 6 months, and then they got married. And I married them about a year and a half ago. And within about a month or two after the marriage, she began again to to use a lot of alcohol. And finally, 10 days ago, she entered Harborview Hospital. Her liver had stopped functioning, and her kidneys were functioning maybe at a quarter of the way in which they were supposed to function. And as a result, all of the liquids were gathering together in her abdomen, and she was just one of the most pathetic things that I believe I've ever seen. But a woman who, in her extreme sickness, was able to present to me a memorable story. I saw her on Thursday evening, and she was real sharp and wide awake. Her skin was as yellow as a dandelion, and her eyes, there was no white, it was just yellow. And we prayed together and we held hands, and she was very frightened. And she was very bitter because the doctors weren't telling her anything at all. The doctors didn't want to tell her that she had less than a 10% chance to live and that she was dying of alcoholism. She said to me, Jim, she says, all day I've been sitting on my pity pot. And I said, that's okay, but you're not sitting there by yourself, Jean Marie. Jesus is there sitting by you. And she looked at me and she said, you mean, Jim, there's a two-holer there? And she believed. And in that spirit of faith, she still clung to hope. And again, I think it was just kind of a miraculous experience for me to be able to help her walk through the door of death into complete freedom. I visited her again on Friday morning, and then on Friday afternoon with another chaplain who works at the Compass Center, Pastor Sue. And Sue and I went up to see her, and we both prayed with her on Friday afternoon. And then Sue visited her on Saturday, and then Sue called me on Sunday morning at about 9:30 and said that Jean Marie had passed peacefully in her sleep. On her death certificate, the cause of death will be alcoholism. If she could have had a liver transplant, she might have made it. But they don't transplant livers for people who have alcoholism unless you have a name like Mickey Mantle. Now, that may be, but this was a particular person who was a very well-known and great sports star. And he also suffered from alcoholism. But the press and his... press, basically, and his supporters, his friends, they always said that he had he was a hard drinker, and that's what his problem was. But our society has a great deal of difficulty naming the name of a disease called alcoholism. It's one of the major causes of homelessness. And it's one of the things that on Thursday, Nair and I want to talk particularly about the causes of homelessness, not only in downtown Seattle, but in every city of America. Why is it that we see so many people who are homeless? And we want to talk about that particularly. But chemical dependency, alcoholism, is one of the major causes. And we'll talk about that, what brings that about for people. Nair, your turn.
Any reactions or any thoughts that come to you as Jim was telling the story?
Back in the Midwest, especially when mothers would sometimes get together that had been girlhood friends, and you know, kids keep mothers so busy. I remember my mother and her best friend, when they wanted to have real fellowship and be able to talk, they went out to one of those two holders and close the door. And that was away from the kids, and that was prime communication. And one of the pictures we have so often is we see people that have the problem of a drug addiction or alcoholism, especially when they've really been hurting and end up on the streets. There's a lot of people that look at them, and if they don't say it, some say it and others don't, and they say garbage. And when you get to know some of these people, they're some of the most saintly people that I've met, some of the most prayerful people, some of the most beautiful people. I think of this one Vietnam vet who used to sit outside, right by the outside the ferry landing, next to where there was a water fountain. And he had his little cup there and his little sign, you know, help a Vietnam vet. And his clothes were dirty, and people would walk by, and I could just guess the thoughts. And one night I was coming into the Compass Center. I had a group of young people. I live on Bainbridge Island, so I come in by ferry. I was a little late to meet the young people that I was going to take on a street walk that night. But I see this fellow sitting there again, and that was not unusual. He was sitting on the sidewalk with his little cup, with his sign. But next to him on the little wall of the fountain was a very well-dressed man just sitting there. And it caught my curiosity, so I thought I'd just stop and say hi. So I stopped and I said hi. And the non-vet, he waved at me and smiled and said, "Hi, Padre." And then the well-dressed man started talking. And he said to me, "Padre, this man saved my life today." Of how many of us could someone say, "This person saved my life today"? What had happened is that he also was alcoholic, but he still had his job. Things hadn't deteriorated. They were pretty bad. He came from Bremerton to Seattle on the ferry with the plan to commit suicide. But then this old vet started talking to him. They became friends. He called the treatment center in Kitsap County. They said, "Come on home, we'll take you in." He was waiting for the ferry to go back to treatment. The person that many people called or thought of as garbage, someone else said, "He saved my life today." What happened? Just became a friend. You think of anything that Jesus said that fits into this picture? That messy clothed Vietnam vet fits the picture of the Samaritan, doesn't he? And a priest walked by, and a choir director walked by, and who else walked by but a Samaritan? An alcoholic became a friend.
Can I tell Terry's story?
Oh, yes, by all means. Terry was especially a wounded healer.
Yeah. Some of you know of Lee Griffin, Dr. Lee Griffin, psychiatrist in our church, missionary on the faculty at Wartburg and Luther Seminary, and consultant to clergy, one of the sensitive, beautiful psychiatrists. Some time ago, Lee said, and I just heard the quote, to greet is to bless. To fail to greet is to curse. Now that's kind of heavy, isn't it? Kind of heavy. I suppose Lutherans could make that last part more heavy than it needs to be. But there are times when to fail to greet is to curse. Let's face it. But to greet is to bless. We had a fellow who's been on the streets for about 5 years, comes over to the Compass to eat, stop in at the chaplain's office to have a cup of coffee. His name is Terry Spencer. And about a month and a half ago, Terry died. He happened to die on our island. Terry has so many names and has influenced thousands of people, and when he died, I think he got more press. TV stations, front page of the Seattle Times, front page of the Bremerton Sun, on Bainbridge Island, the story, two different stories, ran on our little TV station on the hour over the weekend. An alcoholic who slept in a doorway on the way leading to the ferry that most of the commuters would walk by. In the morning, he would greet them as they came, and he would have, the neatest way of just cheering people up and saying, "My, that's a nice dress you're wearing today. Doesn't that look nice?" And then he always had this symbol, you know, "I love you, God bless." Always blessing people. Can you imagine for 5 years, morning and night, keeping on with these thousands of people, and it was his job. Now, he was a pretty severe alcoholic, but he didn't drink much on the job. Then he got to the place where he could get enough, he'd ride the ferry over, and he'd come to our side, and he'd go down the hill, and under the drive-on ramp, he'd made a little camp, and he'd sleep there. And he'd wake up in the morning, and he'd watch the sea otters, and he'd feel he felt like a millionaire. Not many of us on Bainbridge can afford waterfront. Terry came up from his camp to the washroom, and one of his friends, who was a night watchman, looked in, saw his feet, then he came back later and opened it up, and Terry was dead. Well, you call the authorities, and they come. And then he gets some flowers and stuff and takes off for Seattle and puts it there where Terry was always greeting people. The next day, there were flowers all over the place. There were notes. It looked like a shrine where this happy hobo would greet people. And then they came over to our island and around the flagpole of the ferry terminal. Indians and street people and lawyers and doctors and everything, they all gathered around, and we told Terry's stories because Terry's stories were gospel stories. And that old Indian, what's his name? Sky Walking Stick. This big old flute. And he blew that, and some of us felt we could see Terry's spirit ascending. And my
agnostic friend who I'd see from time to time, and he was there, and he says, "Nair, now there was a real service." And we made a plaque, and we put it up where Terry, and it's a brass plaque. It's a beautiful plaque. It gives Terry's name and dates, and it just says, "To greet is to bless." I don't know about you, but I love big ships. I operate a little submarine. It was about as big as a pulpit, that bridge. But I'd watch that bridge on those new ferries, and oh, do they look luxurious, but you can't get close to those. Unless, after I'd had the committal service and the ferry had tooted in honor of Terry about a week later, I was walking and first mate yelled, "Hey, Pastor Ernest, come on up here." Well, I went up on the bridge and oh boy, is that nice. And then they get ready to go, and I better get out of here, because a civilian can't be on this bridge. I've seen the stuff. People got in trouble. Oh, she said, "Stick around. Ride the bridge." And we talked, and we told some more Terry stories. And then the captain came back, and he showed me the new radar, and we got so involved, I almost forgot to get off the boat. How come I got on the bridge that I just dreamt of? Wasn't because I'm a chaplain at the Compass Center. It wasn't because I'm a Lutheran clergyman. It was because I was Terry's friend. And I can feel the difference as I walk on the ferry after Terry's death, the way the people act and react, especially the ferry workers. Because one of the things we realized when Terry quit greeting, we had to pick it up. And we're doing it. And I was listening to John Schramm this morning, and at the end, Paul, let's go greet this person, greet, 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 greet. To greet is to bless.
I would suggest that's a very healthy way to interact with people who are homeless. I wanted just to share a little bit about myself and Nair. Nair has been at the Compass Center now as our chaplain there for a little over 5 years, almost 6 years. And previous to that, he had been pastor at Emmanuel Lutheran Church right on the edge of downtown Seattle. And it was while he was a pastor there at this urban church, Emmanuel Lutheran, that a lot of the people who were members of the congregation were joining churches out in the suburbs because of all of the problem of the urban area. So Nair must have been there probably about 3 or 4 years, and then started a shelter for homeless people at the church where they had a big gymnasium and then so forth. For 10 years at least at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, there was a shelter there for homeless men who were just looking for a place to sleep, to get out of the cold, the wet, and so forth. And so he has had at least 15, 16 years of experience with working with homeless people. And I have been at the Compass Center since January of 1981 as the director for 12 years, 12 and a half years, and then as an associate director for 2 years previous to that. But before I came to the Compass Center, I had had an opportunity in my work as a foreign missionary where I got to know Marion Junghunst and her husband Chuck, who had come over to the island of Sri Lanka. It used to be called the island of Ceylon off the southern tip of India. And there I worked with some of the poorest of the poor who were laborers on the tea plantations. And it was a kind of missionary involvement in the culture and with the people who are very, very not only poor, but extremely oppressed and disenfranchised people, where injustice upon injustice was experienced. And so this is, I think, what prepared me for the kind of ministry that I've been involved in the last 14 and a half years at the Compass Center, where people experience again and again and again injustice after injustice, a kick in the stomach after a kick in the head, so to speak, and finally they are kicked so often and oppressed so often, and so many injustices have been experienced that they truly are in the gutter of society, in the gutter of life. And it is, I believe that that's been the most, for me, the most rewarding part of my work, is to be able to help people to stand up tall again in spite of all of the injustices. You mentioned some of the passing by and some of the verbal stuff that we use in our society and relating people as baggage. Some of the other terms that we use for chemically dependent people are, for instance, the word junkie, which is, of course, really a piece of junk. And one of the things that we know is God doesn't make junk. And again, our society is very, very careful as to how we categorize certain people who are chemically dependent, like the most recent one who died in a treatment center of a heart, of a stroke, wasn't it? Jerry Garcia, the one of the really important people in the music group The Grateful Dead. He was a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, and one of the things we know about heroin addiction is that it is the fatal or the killer drug for many, many, many people. And he described it in his own words as the most comfortable drug of all, the most comfortable experience that one could ever have. And that was his drug of choice, and finally he dies. But he dies of a stroke, not as a junkie, not as a heroin addict. Some of the other terms that we use, when a person relapses, suffering from alcoholism, we generally say, the poor fellow, or she fell off the wagon. And when you fall off a wagon, it's no longer, you're not a part of the community. You're not a part of a journey. You're in the ditch. You fell off the wagon. This is one of the ways in which we as a society need to clean up our act in relating to people who experience homelessness because of chemical dependency or because of mental illness. And these are some of the things that we deal with at the Compass Center. I wanted to tell the story of a wounded healer. The story of Jerry, Jerry Lillehay. I had lunch with him just a week ago, last Wednesday. He and I had lunch together, and I've known Jerry for all the 14 and a half years that I've been in Pioneer Square. Six of those years, Jerry was one of the sickest of the sick. In his disease of alcoholism, and he was by far the most prolific panhandler in Pioneer Square. He would drink anywhere from 6 to 8, 10 bottles of fortified wine in a day. He was very, very often in the hospital. He would sleep in doorways and dumpsters and phone booths wherever he could. The county, King County, spent probably $500,000 on this man. He had been out at the detoxification center probably 150 or 160 times. He had been in treatment 11 times. And he was always a very dear friend of mine. And he would consistently say to me, when I would be concerned about him and about getting the necessary funds to keep the Compass Center going. He said, "Not to worry, Jim, God's on your side." And I would always respond to him, "And Jerry, God's on your side." And finally, after treatment, he moved into a transitional home where he was no longer able to recycle back to Pioneer Square with his old friends and everything else. And he lived in that transitional home for 11 months, and then he relapsed for 10 days. But he came right back, because when you relapse in the disease of alcoholism, you don't go back up to the top of the slope and begin an easy slide down again. You don't start out healthy. You start out where you were in the disease. One of the things that science is able to tell us. And so Jerry, when he relapsed, he started out right down at the very bottom of the slope again, and he realized what he was doing. And within 10 days, he was back in treatment and then back in the transitional home. And today, after 6 years of being sober and weller than well, he runs all of the computerized system for the detoxification and the assessment center for the Division of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse for King County, which is a huge, massive data bank in the computers that are operated. His brilliance is really through and through. And one of the things that Jerry's spirit is so strong is the spirit of God that has claimed him and given him this transformation. And so he feels that everything he does is done because of God's given him this chance. God not being done with me yet. One of the exciting things that he was sharing with me on Wednesday, last Wednesday, was the fact that now God has made him the head of the union. And so he's a union organizer and demanding just pay for people who do the proper job. In other words, justice still is to be done in Jerry's life and with Jerry's life. And so consistently, the man has been a wounded healer. And he has found also, and this is another, just for me, because I know Jerry so well, he also has healed himself, and that's one of the beauties of what's happened. Jerry is a gay man, and he was never able to live with this until he was fully into his recovery. And now he is just as open and sharing of his sexuality and the beauty of his life. And he has a beautiful life. And he has said to me, he said, "Jim, thanks be to God for the fact that I am who I am." That's what a wounded healer is about.
You can see and hear Jerry's words.
Tomorrow.
You can see the video.
Yeah, I want to show you, give you a tour of this agency, this Lutheran organization. In Pioneer Square. So I brought a video along, and I want to share this tomorrow evening when we want to have our session and talk about the history of the Compass Center and its ministry with homeless people, and to talk about all the different programs. And so the best way to do that is to just watch this 18-minute video and then to talk about how it evolved and you know, how many beautiful stories there are there. And Jerry's story, he shares his story, which is something that that not too many people who move from homelessness back home, they aren't real willing to share where they've been. There's lots and lots of shame. There's a lot of guilt involved. There's a lot of embarrassment. And so one of the things that we always do is respect the anonymity of people who come through the agency and are successful in breaking the cycle of homelessness and then moving back home as a part again of society. And so there's not many people that are willing to share that story. But Jerry shares his story. And so he's a part of the video that you'll see tomorrow evening.
I'd like to say something. I work for the Social Security Administration in Seattle.
Oh my goodness!
And I have been involved in some studies, and one of them has been looking at substance abuse. And I and my coworker have gone in and audited Luther Compass Center on KE.
Sure.
And have spoken quite heavily throughout the nation about the work that you guys have done. We've just been super impressed.
Yeah.
And this is a nice affirmation.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. We have developed a particular program for people who are most vulnerable within the homeless community, people who are mentally ill and who are the late stage alcoholic people. And these are people who are declared disabled, and so they receive a supplementary security income for the disabled because of alcoholism or mental illness. And it's what's called an SSI check, and that comes through the Social Security Department. And each person who receives this kind of check, and it amounts to $460 a month, is supposed to have a protective payee. And so we have a protective payee program that takes these people's checks. And we have, 110 clients now who are protective payees. And then we have a case manager who manages their money completely. Gets them a place to live in a low-cost apartment, usually through the Seattle Housing Authority, Section 8 housing. And so there's all kinds of hoops, that paper hoops you have to jump through. Well, a disabled person can't do that, but with a caseworker, he or she can. So we get them a place to live, we pay the rent, we pay their utilities. Some of them have cable TV, and so you pay their cable TV bill and so forth. And that's all then taken from their account. And I sign those checks
every
month.
Every time they come in to get a couple dollars,
last
a couple more days, there's a smile and a
greeting. That's right. That's
and,
right.
And some of the people that work in that are the most loved people around.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
The joy of that is that in my study, I not only talk to you guys, but I also interview the beneficiaries.
Sure.
What they thought of the Luther Compass Center.
Yeah.
Again, we're so appreciative.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a wonderful relationship that evolves, and it's almost like something like parent-child, and that can be unhealthy when you're interacting with healthy people, but when you're interacting with people who have severe disabilities, it's a very beautiful relationship. It's what's called steadfast, tough love. And when Louise read the psalm before, Psalm 107, we have a chapel on the first floor of the building, which you won't see in the video, but the name of our chapel is the Chapel of Steadfast Love. And that word, steadfast love, comes in that 107th Psalm. Mm-hmm. What is it, 12 or 13 times, something like that? And that's where Nair's office is also.
And that's where a lot of the stories are told and heard.
Yeah.
And that's where we burn a lot of sweetgrass. In fact, we had burned so much that one night Don was going to call the fire department because we were having an especially good chapel. Or I forget what. But the Native Americans have something special to give in the healing process. I could tell you so many stories. And the last maybe 3-4 years, at least 95% of the time when we have our little Eucharistic service in our little chapel on Wednesday night, and that's an intimate little group. We have a larger group, more traditional, on Sunday with people coming in from the churches and that. But old Indian George comes in there with his sweetgrass or with his sage or cedar, and the confessional service is done more with symbols and chant than it is with words. And as people are smudged and blessed, they offer up their hurts, their mistakes, the hurts of the world, the hurts of their friends, and then just open to the grace of God that this sweetgrass is a symbol. There are two symbols that are the most powerful in my work down there. One is the crucifix.
I have little crucifixes like this. I sometimes will give as many as 100 of these away a month. When I run out of them and then someone finds out I have them again, maybe in an hour I'll have 10, 15 people lining up at the chapel door because word is on the streets the Padre has them. I can tell you lots of stories about that. But Baptists and Catholics and Lutherans and everybody, they want this one because they're street people. You know what this says to the street person? Do an awful lot. And they look up at that crucifix, that beautiful carved crucifix in the chapel, or at this little one. My God knows what it is to suffer. My God does not abandon me in my addiction, in my homelessness, in my mental illness. And it's kind of a special one. Just one, I think, closing. I think we have a few minutes. Out of, I could tell you story after story about my friend Indian George, but maybe I will give the contrast, because Mother Teresa said, and we could put this into a lot of places, she said this in Wisconsin a few years ago when she was here. A friend of mine who was driving around told me about it. And someone, I think, at a Franciscan monastery asked her what she saw as the thrust of her life for the rest of her time. I mean, she'd won the prize, all this stuff. And she said very simply, to get the rich and the poor to know each other. I think that's a prophetic word. Now, where they get to know each other can vary. And I think of my friend who has a PhD in chemistry. Came out of the New Mexico prison system because a friend of his had come to Compass Center. He had written to the Catholic Archbishop, and the Catholic Archbishop had referred that to the nun who was kind of in charge of things like that, and she referred and got him in at the Compass Center. And when his PhD friend got out, he came there. But this chemistry scientist was pretty healthy in terms of his mental attitudes, his spirituality, the whole thing. And I said to him one day, you know, you have spent quite a long time being incarcerated, and yet you've come out remarkably healthy. How come? And he kind of smiled. He says, well, there are scars you can't see. I'm a lifelong Episcopalian. I love my church. But I never would have made it in prison if the Navajo Indians hadn't taken me into their spiritual circle. He could say, they saved my life. Now, I guess they were wounded or they wouldn't have been in prison.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
And knowing the Navajo Indians, most of them I've known, they don't have much money. And knowing guys with PhD in chemistry, they do. But they got together. Well, I think it's time for us to...
Thank you for enabling us to tell stories. And as Nair mentioned, there are many, many, many more. And they're wonderful stories. And we'll continue on tomorrow.
Basically, they happen a number of times every day.
Yeah.
If you're there and willing to see them,
yeah,
they're there. They're all around us. Yeah. And I guess, I think, that's true in all of our communities. And we make a real mistake of not affirming that in one another. Huh?